Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another edition of KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week, your window on the world of politics, Iowa style, where we explore and analyze who's been making news in and around the state capital, what that news is, and what it all means. I'm Dennis Hart, joined as always by my partner in politics, Laura Bellin of the blog site Bleeding Heartland. Welcome, Laura.
Good to be here, Dennis.
Yes, our job on this broadcast, as you know, is to talk about politics, and we will do so. But before we begin, Laura and I need to acknowledge what happened in downtown Des Moines this Monday afternoon. Two students were shot to death at the Starts Right Here educational mentorship program, and the founder of that program, Will Holmes, whose stage name as a rapper is Will Keeps, was seriously injured. Three people have been taken into custody. Governor Reynolds has issued a statement saying she is shocked and saddened to hear about the shooting. My heart breaks for these kids and their families. And Laura, that just about says it all.
It is. It's just tragic. And I wanted to say that at any time there's something like this, it's just a horrific tragedy, but it's also very triggering for many people. And if you or anyone in your household is struggling, if this news makes you feel anxious or grieving, there are resources. There are free resources available. You can dial 211 from anywhere in the state of Iowa. There's also 211iowa.org. website. There's a 211 Iowa app that has resources for grief and anxiety. Also, everystep.org, that has, including in the KHOI listening area, there are a lot of grief and loss support services available in Iowa. Everystep.org is one website where people can find those.
And of course, Laura and I extend our condolences to everyone affected by this horrendous event, and we wish you well. All right. On with the rest of our show, and we have a lot to talk about tonight. Governor Reynolds' school voucher program, which has dominated the headlines since the legislature kicked into session 2 weeks ago, on this Monday night appears to be almost a done deal. That's right. Her plan is to use taxpayer money to fund private school scholarships, stayed on the fast track today, Monday, and all of last week. Both houses of the state legislature are likely to give their approval tonight. So, Laura, as of 7:02 on this Monday night, what's the very latest?
I have been watching the Iowa House debate for approximately the last 3 hours. There are still several speakers who plan to get up and talk about the bill. Most of the speakers are House Democrats who oppose the bill. There are a few Republicans who have said they plan to speak, but Democrats did not offer any amendments. So once everyone is done speaking on the bill, there should be a vote. I don't expect things to go very late into the night in the House. On the Senate side, though, they are still in recess. The Democrats and the Senate are caucusing, and they haven't even come back for the actual debate on the bill. They had a debate over a manager's amendment, which made some minor changes to the plan. So I am not sure when it could be a very late night in the Senate, because I imagine that many of the Democrats are going to want to speak, and they don't have the same time limits for floor speeches in the Senate that they do in the Iowa House, where each person who stands gets 10 minutes.
You have learned that the governor is apparently so confident of winning approval tonight that she has booked time tomorrow to hold a news conference for the signing of the bill.
I have a very good source on this that says the governor plans to hold a bill signing press conference in the Capitol Rotunda tomorrow morning at 11 a.m. Remember that after a bill passes in the House and Senate, there are some technical things that need to happen. The text needs to be finalized. It needs to be taken to her office. So they do seem to be very confident that they have the votes to get this done in time for everything, all the paperwork to reach her by tomorrow morning. It's never really been a question about the Iowa Senate. There are, I think, are at most two or three Iowa Senate Republicans who might vote against this bill. And the question has always been about the House, where Republicans have that 64-36 majority, so they can afford to lose 13 votes. And the question on everyone's mind is how many Republicans are going to stand up and vote against this voucher bill.
And on this perhaps last day of the debate, some late happenings took place outside the legislative chambers. Democratic State Auditor Rob Sand weighed in on all this, releasing a statement in which he said he is alarmed by what he calls the intentional lack of transparency and accountability under this bill. Let's explain that.
Yes, and the state auditor's office is, they conduct audits of all kinds of government bodies, local as well as state. And so school districts need to have annual audits, and those are reviewed by the state auditors. And he mentioned in the statement that they have occasionally uncovered waste, fraud, and abuse in these audits. However, private schools do not have to have regular audits at all. He said once they get these public dollars for tuition payments or other services, they could do almost anything with the money, and the public may not find out at all, and there would be no way for the state auditor to investigate that. So he said that he's alarmed by it.
And one other thing transpired, at least one other thing today, the Legislative Service Agency came up with its estimate of what this would cost once the bill was fully implemented in 3 or 4 years. The Des Moines Register on Sunday had editorially demanded that the Republicans wait until they find out. Democrats had been saying the same thing. Well, now the LSA has weighed in, and it's pretty much the same estimate that the governor had come up with.
It's close to the governor's office estimate. So about $107 million would be the cost for the first year, about $132 million for the second year, about close to $300 million in the third year. And then by the fourth year, the LSA is estimating about $345 million a year. There are some costs they were not able to estimate. For instance, how much would the state pay the third-party vendor, which will be selected to administer these education savings accounts? That hasn't been determined yet. There are a few other assumptions, like how much the state is going to be spending per pupil in public schools, because that's going to dictate the amount of these private school payments that go into the education savings accounts. But this is their best guess. And as you say, it was fairly close to what the governor's office had said. Over the first 4 years, about a little over $918 million. And then after that, $340-some million a year.
So let's quickly review what happened last week to get us to this point on this Monday night. Last Tuesday, House Republicans advanced a rule change that would exempt the bill from going through the Appropriations and Ways and Means Committees. Why was that important?
It was important because that would have really slowed down the process if the bill had had to go through appropriations because it spends money, and ways and means because it affects taxes, in the sense that it says the education savings account money wouldn't be subject to Iowa income tax. It was also possible that there were enough Republican opponents on one or both of those committees to keep the bill bottled up in committee. I should say that this afternoon, before they embarked on debating the voucher bill, the House did a vote to adopt that rule change, and five Republican members voted against those rules, which is very unusual for any members of the majority party. So that indicates that there are at least a few Republicans in the caucus who are very unhappy with how this is all playing out.
Then last Tuesday night, the Iowa House held a 90-minute public hearing on the bill in the Iowa Supreme Court room at the state capitol. Was this any more than, shall we say, just a public exhibition? I mean, did it change anybody's mind?
I don't think it did. Usually when these public hearings happen, and they have happened on many of the controversial bills in the past, so the voter ID bill and also the collective bargaining bill, and the format is usually alternating speakers for and against, and usually nobody's minds are changed by this. The speakers, most of the speakers in favor were people who already had children in private schools, and many of the speakers against were people who were either educators or parents of special needs kids, or in a few cases, members of school boards. And there was, in fact, even somebody who described himself as a conservative Christian school board president who spoke against the bill.
Then last Wednesday, and again, we're going chronologically last week to see how we got to this point on Monday, a key day on Wednesday, committees for both the House and the Senate voted to recommend passage of the bill. That was just a tremendous day for Republicans.
Yes, and there was never any doubt that within the Senate Education Committee, they had a majority in support. The House, remember, Pat Grassley, the Speaker, he created this special 5-member Education Reform Committee just to consider big bills like this one. And so it passed along party lines, the 3 Republicans against the 2 Democrats. It didn't go to the regular House Education Committee, where, for all we know, there may be several Republicans who oppose the bill.
And on Thursday, the Senate Appropriations Committee took up the bill and they approved it.
Yes. Again, a party line vote. So that made it eligible for floor debate starting this week in the upper chamber. And as we mentioned earlier, in the lower chamber, they have a rule change so that they didn't send this bill to either the Appropriations or the Ways and Means Committee.
Then on Friday, the governor, knowing that there's considerable opposition around the state, apparently, polls show that, to this bill, she released a letter to Iowans saying school choice is not an anti-public school movement.
Yes, and this was similar to what she had said in her condition of the state address. She expanded on a few of the points, as she mentioned again that one of her daughters is a public school teacher, and she talked about how this is going to create more opportunities, and she urged people not to pit public schools against private schools.
All right, let's talk about exactly what the governor's plan is in very simple form, and we can do this. The governor's plan, I'll start it, you finish it, would phase in over 3 years and eventually let any Iowa student access about $7,600 a year in state money.
Yes, this is an unlimited entitlement program. The word unlimited was actually in the Legislative Services Agency's fiscal note. And some of the Democrats mentioned during this Iowa House debate I was listening to earlier that this is extremely unusual, that there's any kind of a bill that creates an open-ended, unlimited payment. So as many Iowa students as attend private school starting in the third year, any Iowa student attending a private school could get that full state payment. So really the only limiting factor is going to be how many private schools are there, how many slots are there to accept students who want to transfer over.
And nobody really knows the answer to this question. We know that there aren't a lot of private schools in Iowa, about 180. Will private schools show up in those rural school districts that are really worried about losing their public money? Will they be encouraged, the private schools, to set up school classrooms there? Will they go online? Nobody really knows what this is going to do.
It's a big question. And Tom Chapman, who's the leader of the Iowa Catholic Conference, which is, of course, very much in favor of the bill, he said it's an open question that it's possible that the Catholic school network has shrunk in Iowa, as has the public school network. There has been consolidation over the last 50 or 60 years. And he said it's possible that the Catholic that the diocese might look at expanding some of their school options. I think it's also possible that some online academies could spring up, and those might be fairly cheap to operate. They would still have to be accredited by the Iowa Department of Education, but since there are 41 counties in Iowa that have zero private schools and another 23 that have just one private school, it stands to reason that there may be people who see an opportunity. And that was something that wasn't really the fiscal note on this bill. I didn't assume that there would be an increasing number of private schools as time goes on.
Two more quick notes on this. You may wonder what the carbon capture pipeline proposals in Iowa have to do with the school choice plan, but there is a connection thanks to Bruce Rastetter.
Yes, Bruce Rastetter, who is the head of Summit Carbon Solutions, Summit Ag, a very influential Republican donor, very close to the governor, meets with the governor several times a year as a past member of the Iowa Board of Regents. He emailed, I think, every legislator. I didn't confirm with every legislator, but I heard from quite a few people in both parties that he emailed basically the entire Iowa House and Senate to encourage them to pass the school choice program. And it was unusual because he's just not someone who's spoken out in the past on K-12 education issues. He did formerly have a role in higher education, but so it looked a little bit like somebody trying to demonstrate to the Reynolds administration, hey, look, I'm helping you out with one of your big priorities. And Summit Carbon Solutions has filed an application for a permit for this carbon dioxide pipeline, but the Iowa Utilities Board has not yet acted on that permit.
Indeed. It's going to be very interesting to see how that plays out over the course of the year here. And one more note on this. The Wall Street Journal's conservative editorial page weighed in on the governor's school voucher plan today with a big editorial saying, in part, the new year is off to an excellent start for students and parents. They love the plan.
They do. And this is happening in quite a few states. It's moving fast in the Utah legislature. The new governor of Arkansas is pushing something that's very similar. So clearly, this is a top priority for the conservative movement nationally to expand these programs in the states where they already exist and get them going in states like Iowa that haven't had them up to now.
All right, let's take a breath. It is 14 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock. Normally, I do not give the time in case you're listening to us on a rerun, but I want you to know what time it is on this Monday night because we are live, and as we're on the air, the state legislature is debating the school voucher plan, and by the time you listen to this in a day or two, something's going to have happened. So we are happy you're with us. This is KHOI Radio's Capital Week, your one-stop source for everything political going on in Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart with Laura Bellin. We're here every week at this time to talk about politics Iowa style and how it's affecting All of us. Wow, what a week last week, Laura.
Oh,
Let's talk about the state Supreme Court. They heard argument in an LGBTQ case that is going to have ramifications.
This law that is being challenged was passed almost 4 years ago at the very end of the 2019 legislative session. It was a law that was designed to deny Medicaid coverage in Iowa for gender affirming surgery for transgender people. And there was immediately a lawsuit filed. There was some procedural issues. So after about a year, they were told that they had to refile, jump through a few more hoops. Took until November of 2021 that a Polk County District Court considered this lawsuit, found in favor of the plaintiff, said this law is unconstitutional, and the state appealed to the Iowa Supreme Court. And only now, more than a year after that, the Iowa Supreme Court heard oral arguments. And I tell you, there may not be clarity when they issue a ruling, because the way the justices were asking questions, it sounded like several of them are inclined to consider this a moot case. Because the state has agreed to pay for the surgeries of these two individuals who are the plaintiffs, or to consider it, to resolve it on other grounds without determining whether this law violates the Iowa Constitution. And that would be a disappointing result for all sides, both the state and the plaintiff side. The plaintiffs are being represented by the ACLU of Iowa in this. And they were saying, no, you know, this is something the court should resolve. But it really sounded to me like some of the justices were more interested in a very narrow ruling that didn't really get to the constitutional issue.
Let's go back now to the State House and talk about what they introduced last week, other than the school voucher program. All right. They started in the House for the third time to enact legislation banning so-called gay panic legal defenses in Iowa. And this has the backing of gay rights groups.
Yes, this is one of the few bills that the majority has introduced in the Iowa legislature in recent years that LGBT advocacy groups have supported. It has gotten through the Iowa House twice before with very large, I mean, in fact, unanimous almost majorities. And it would say that if you assaulted or killed someone, you couldn't say that you were temporarily insane because the person was gay or trans, and it made you basically go out of your mind. So that would, it would preclude that defense in court in Iowa. And this is a bill, like I said, it's passed the Iowa House a couple of times. It always dies in the Senate Judiciary Committee. And I don't know whether there's any greater chance right now that it'll be able to move forward in the Iowa Senate. I don't know who in the Iowa Senate was blocking it in the past and whether those people are still serving.
Okay. Another House bill would limit SNAP benefits. Now, this is important. This is the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program benefits, and a bill introduced in the State House would limit who qualifies for food assistance.
So SNAP, this is what many people commonly refer to as food stamps. So the technical name is SNAP. This is actually a pretty wide-ranging bill. It goes well beyond food assistance. This is something the Iowa Senate has introduced versions of this and passed versions of this that would create higher hurdles for Iowans to qualify for various public assistance programs, most notably SNAP and Medicaid. And the Iowa Senate has approved several of these bills. They've always died in the House Human Resources Committee up to now. But when this bill was introduced, it really got everyone's attention because the top House leaders, Speaker Grassley and Majority Leader Matt Winchittle, were both co-sponsors of this bill that would, among other things, create new asset tests beyond what the federal government says about who qualifies for SNAP food assistance. It would create new work requirements for Medicaid. And among other things, it would say that if you're on SNAP in Iowa, the only food that you can buy is food that is approved for the Women, Infants, and Children's Program that people commonly know of as WIC. And that just created a firestorm because the WIC list of approved foods is so limited. No meat, no cheese, no fresh produce. And it sounds like House Republicans already are saying they plan to amend this bill.
So this bill would, pardon me, this bill would also stop some people from buying things like fresh meat, white bread, and sliced American cheese. Why are they doing that?
Well, I think that there was a lack of understanding. One of the co-sponsors of the bill, I saw him on Twitter responding to somebody saying, don't fearmonger, you know, nobody supports that. I think that the intention was to create the eligibility, to make the eligibility limits for SNAP similar to the eligibility limits for WIC. But the way they wrote the bill, it said the only foods that you can buy on SNAP are the foods that are approved on WIC. So I think that from the authors of the bill, there was a basic lack of understanding of what the WIC approved foods are. That is the impression that I got from him. But the asset tests are quite stringent. And one of them would mean that if a household had more than one vehicle, that they may be deemed to be too well off to qualify for SNAP. And as many people know, there are a lot of working poor who have multiple vehicles, multiple jobs in the household. And so the advocates, the Iowa Hunger Coalition, is sort of coordinating the opposition to this bill. And so they have many objections just beyond the restrictions on what kind of food people could buy on SNAP. They have many other objections to the new eligibility hurdles.
Also last week in the House, a representative, Steve Holt, Republican, said he and other lawmakers have heard a lot of high school and college students singing the praises of socialism. So he's backing a bill that would encourage, require high school teachers to hold discussions comparing political ideologies. Honestly, I thought that was being done anyway in high schools.
Yes, I know. I think we learned about capitalism and socialism and communism, but of course I went to high school while the Cold War was still happening. So maybe that's not part of the current high school curriculum. I should say that Steve Holt's wife is a public school educator herself, so in Crawford County. So I don't know, maybe, but this, I haven't seen a lot of discussion about this bill yet. There is a trend in states with Republican-controlled legislatures to pass bills that deal with dictate what can and cannot be said in the classroom, and this looks like one of them.
Yep. All right, let's move on to the state Senate. Senate panel, a subcommittee last week advanced a bill to get rid of a gender balance requirement for government boards, committees, and commissions. We had talked about this last Monday, but it's taken its first step.
Yes, I attended this subcommittee, and it was interesting. This is one of these bills where nobody, no group or lobbyist is registered in favor of the bill. Many are registered in opposition to the bill. A couple, like the Iowa League of Cities, are just keeping an eye on the bill without taking a position one way or the other. And so the natural question to the bill sponsor, State Senator Jason Schultz, is why are you doing this and who's asking you to do this? And he said he didn't want to say. He said that he had heard from a number of people that they wanted this change, but that they didn't want to be public about that because they were afraid of what he called the woke mob. And when a number of the speakers against the bill pointed out that Iowa actually does very well compared to most other states in terms of gender balance on our state boards, and so it's proof that this law has been very successful. And he said, well, if we're doing, the bill isn't needed anymore, the law isn't needed anymore because we're doing well, even though, you know, the states that don't have similar laws have much far less gender balance on their boards and commissions. So he, for him, it sounded like this is something that's important to him to make the state less woke. That was a word he used more than once. The full Senate State Government Committee has not considered this bill yet. The other Republican who was on the subcommittee didn't really take a position. She said she would vote for the bill to come out of the subcommittee because she wanted to move the conversation forward, but she didn't say anything that was particularly praising the idea. That was a new state senator, Sherry Lynn Westrich. And of course, the Democrat on the subcommittee, Pam Yoakum, was very against the bill. I imagine all the Democrats will vote against this bill.
Yep. All right. Here's a very interesting one in the Senate. Bills were introduced last week that would curtail eminent domain chances for hazardous liquid pipeline companies. We just talked about Bruce Rastetter. This is so interesting that Republicans are introducing these bills.
Well, one of the Republicans involved with this has introduced bills like this in the past. He represents a Northwest Iowa district, Jeff Taylor, and there's a lot of opposition in rural Iowa to these pipelines. I mean, a lot of bills are introduced, right? A lot of bills, even from the majority party, are introduced and don't go anywhere. So I'm going to be curious to see whether Republican leaders in the Iowa Senate actually allow this to go forward, because most bills never get out of a committee.
Yep. Another bill introduced last week on cell phone use. It would make all cell phone use when you're driving that is not hands-free illegal.
Yes, this is something that the Iowa legislature has periodically tried to tackle. And the current law on this is fairly weak compared to other states. And there have been public safety advocates that have wanted something like this for years. And it's just never gotten a lot of momentum. But I'm going to hesitate to say that it won't go anywhere this year, because as we all know, I didn't think that the bottle bill would pass last year. And
you know,
right now, I mean, this has been an uphill climb for bills restricting cell phone use in the past.
Laura, we do all know that about the bottle bill thing last year. I will not let people forget that. Okay. Another bill introduced last week. This is, again, interesting. The Senate File 45. It would undermine potential federal regulations that could require coronavirus vaccinations or testing for businesses. Oh my, we just, the Iowa legislature just doesn't like anything the federal government might do on coronavirus.
Yeah, and this, I mean, this is one of these bills that could have some unintended consequences. So again, I am wondering whether the text of this might be changed before it comes to the floor, or maybe it won't. Right now, it's just gotten through the first stage of getting through a subcommittee, because Iowa is a state that has a state-run occupational safety and health administration. That's what most people know as OSHA. Some states just have the federal government run their OSHA programs. And I just think this could be tricky. This would definitely lead to litigation. To say that the state labor commissioner can't enforce federal OSHA rules that are related to COVID, I'm not sure how this would go in the courts.
We'll find out. Also, on this Monday, the Federal Food and Drug Administration proposed a simplified approach for future coronavirus vaccination efforts, basically saying, let's just make it like a flu shot.
Yes, and I think that this is a moving target, obviously, right? Because new variants are coming in all the time, and similar to how the flu has different variants or ascendant in different years. And so I think that because it's been complicated for people, but I'm just wondering how many Americans are actually going to get an annual COVID shot, because it's such a small minority that have even had the most recent booster that protects against the most recent Omicron variants.
I've had that, haven't you?
I have indeed. Yes. My whole immediate family has had that latest booster, but the statistics for Iowa, I think only less than 60% of Iowa adults have even had the initial two shot series.
Yes. All right. And very briefly, last week, indications the coronavirus pandemic might, just might, be receding in the state.
Yes, the hospitalization numbers are down, as we've discussed before. I'm not looking very closely at the case numbers because so many people are taking home tests and their cases aren't being reported. But hospitalizations do seem to be trending down. The deaths, I mean, they're still recording two or three dozen deaths a week, although those aren't deaths that occurred within the last week. Usually there's a time lag. I am keeping an eye on what's happening at the Iowa Veterans Home, which is the state's largest nursing home in Marshalltown. And they still have, I mean, it's almost every day, if not every day, every other day, they find a new resident or a new employee testing positive. And so they have about 15 residents right now in isolation. They haven't sent anyone to the hospital recently, which is good, but it definitely is still there in the background. It seems like it's always in the background.
A couple of minutes left. Let's go down to the Senate bill that would make all city and school elections partisan. Candidates would have their names placed on the ballot only by their political party. No independent candidates could run. What in the world is that all about?
So State Senator Brad Zahn of Urbandale is a pretty prolific bill filer. And most of the bills he files, he is also behind the effort to reinstate the death penalty, something he's done a number of times that hasn't advanced. He is also behind the bill that would eliminate tenure at state universities, which for several years didn't go anywhere. Then actually it got through committee in both chambers. So you just never know. I haven't heard a lot of support for this idea, making city and school board elections partisan. Certainly the main education lobby groups are very against that. And I just don't know whether leadership is behind this bill.
And very quickly, Laura, it was William Shakespeare. We always try to bring in a lot of education into this program. William Shakespeare, who had Juliet in Romeo and Juliet, ask, what's in a name? Well, the times and names are changing in the Iowa State Legislature, as you have documented.
Yes, I like to keep an eye on this. Every year I pull together who's who in the Iowa Senate and who's who in the Iowa House, mainly to give people some background on leadership from their both parties and who's on the key committees and what the demographics are of the legislature. And I do always look at the common names. It used to be for many years that Mary was always the most common name for women in the Iowa legislature. There's only one Mary left now in the Iowa House. Even as recently as 2020, there were four Marys in the Iowa House. And now there are still quite a few Daves. Tom or Thomas are very common. Four men each named either Dave or David or Tom or Thomas. Three Roberts, three Bryans, three Michael or Mikes. And so I would say, though, that I see more millennial ascendancy is maybe too strong a word, but there are now two met women each named Heather and Megan. There are two men named Austin in the Iowa House. And I think we're just going to see, as we now have fewer Garys. There used to be three Garys, now just one Gary left in the Iowa House. And so I just find that interesting. And in terms of surnames, there are two Myers in the State House and two Taylors in the State Senate.
I'm Dennis, here, Laura. We're out of time. See you next week.
See you next week.
We will be back here at this same time slot. We hope you have a safe, happy, and very healthy week.